Well, I think Christian movies over the last 10 years have really gotten good.
Oh, yeah. They've improved.
The production value is just as good as any $100 million movie because we have the same cameras and all that. We just don't have all the visual effects.
Hey, friends. Welcome to the Victor Marks Podcast with Victor Marks, founder of All Things Possible Ministries. Welcome to the show where we bring you real conversations faced with life's hard truths, stories of redemption, and the latest from the front lines. Whether you're on the road, getting your day started, or finally settling in, we've got an exciting new episode planned for you. So let's dive in to today's show.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Victor Marks Show. Today, I've got a couple of friends. First of all, let's just do wardrobe clarification. We just got finished working out, so if you think we're going to be in a three-piece suit, ain't going to happen. We actually went to the gym.
We did. Mm-hmm. Good gym.
Yeah,
good day.
Yeah. And then we did some blade work down at the training center.
That was awesome.
Well,
that was really cool.
I got to tell you guys.
It gives a little sample of what you do, but it was awesome.
You guys are pretty smooth with the blade. Oh. I was actually surprised.
Thank you.
You thought we'd be really uncoordinated? Come well, on, I played Hercules for crying out loud.
Okay, that's true.
I did most of my fights.
Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, y'all had to go. Hey, folks, let me introduce my guest. For those of you who are in a certain age bracket, you know Kevin Sorbo immediately. He's best, are you best known for Hercules?
And oh, Avengers? Sure.
Yeah, that's
sure.
The
Hercules, you know, 7 years on that, then 5 years on Andromeda, but I've done over 80 movies since then. So
yeah.
I do have a good crowd of people. Like, you know, I do a lot of family-friendly, faith-based movies. I call them, every movie's faith-based, if you think about it. If you're an atheist, it's pretty strong faith to believe in absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
A sad way to go through life, I think. But I think every movie is faith-based, so I like to say more family-friendly movies.
Good, good. And then, Braden, here you are. Man cub.
I'm here.
How old are you?
21, of last August.
Yeah. So I met you, I think last year, at a Turning Point event or something.
Yeah, in Tampa.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was impressed by you. You know, nothing to do with your dad or parents. And there's, I was like, because this is why. I didn't feel like you were living under a shadow. I felt like you were standing on his shoulders.
Thank you.
And I thought, that's, isn't that the way it's supposed
we
to be?
We raised him right.
Yeah.
We raised him right. And, homeschooling.
Yeah, there you go.
Church.
So.
God first.
It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But for you, I want to start with you. Mm-hmm. Because you're probably, there's a lot of people watching in your age group. How come you're not messed up?
Oh, that's a good question.
How about that? You know,
that was hard. It was because, you know, growing up, I was raised in Thousand Oaks, California, which is about 40 miles north of LA itself. Mm-hmm. And it's a great little community. You know, I was homeschooled, but I was always very extroverted, very outgoing. And so, you know, I would go to youth group and I'd make friends there and I'd get invited to these parties. You know, the parties that specifically mess these kids up. But I remember watching all of these movies and the teenagers have to sneak the stuff in and it's all so sneaky to drink and it's all so. And I get there and the parents are buying it for the kids.
Whoa.
And I was going, well, this.
Welcome to California.
Welcome
yeah.
to California.
And I'm sitting here going, this kind of defeats the whole purpose of sneaking around. I don't know. This doesn't really seem much fun. And then people started coming to me and handing me drinks like, oh, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? And I was like, I'm not really feeling it. And then they started paying attention to me more. And I have a massive ego. And so them just paying attention to me fueled it. And so I became known as the kid who wouldn't drink. You know, I would have parties at the house with them and it'd be dry. You showed up with anything, you're kicked out. But it made people focus on me. And so I'm not messed up purely because of my ego.
Well, see, I believe that because in a world where everybody wants to be different mm-hmm. and yet fit in, I tell folks, you know, hey, just do the opposite of what the world is doing. Watch the attention you get.
Yeah.
And you tapped into that. Must feel good for you as a dad to...
Yeah. I mean, it's. I think you know, my wife sort of led the way here with the homeschooling. I think that was important too. We both got so tired of what was going on in our public schools, and you know, I'm a fast jump forward to COVID. I think one of the blessings of COVID, 2 million more families are now homeschooling because they woke up to the realities of how horrible our public school system is.
Right.
Anything the government runs, it sucks. Just so you know that they do nothing. They produce nothing. They produce a disaster is what they produce. They produce
the opposite.
The opposite of what they should be doing. So I tell people all the time. I said we gotta fight in front of ourselves. And so you guys gotta wake up to what the education, kindergarten through universities, are doing.
Especially universities.
Oh my God! Yeah,
it's.
I joke that I you know. I played an atheist college professor in God's Not Dead, and I said, it's redundant. I'm sorry, I played a college professor. That's all I got to say. It pretty much covers what's going
Which
on.
Which was a great role. I mean, that
it was fun.
Huge impact. Yeah. And I think that helped to show people, because we have been almost hypnotized in our culture to, once your kid graduates high school, they must go to college. Says who?
Says who?
And says where?
Yeah.
You're going to pay
$200,000 in debt with a degree in English. What are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's a pyramid scheme. You're going to go just, back and teach English.
What a waste.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a change happening, and Brandon, you're part of that. Mm-hmm. Didn't you write a book?
I did. So I was homeschooled from second grade all the way through graduation, right? Mm-hmm. My mom, at the middle-ish of second grade, end of the first semester for us, you know, elementary school kids, she went to my teacher, she said, how's Braden's book reports? And without skipping a beat, teacher goes, they're not good at all. Mm. She goes, that's kind of your job to tell me. Why do I have to like press it out of you, right? And so she started sitting and doing my book reports with me. Mm. And through that, she realized, this is homeschooling. And so before second grade even finished, I was pulled out of school and she started with me.
Wow.
My siblings, they went to kindergarten to make some friends, which in hindsight, she wishes she could take back because you can be plenty social without going to school at all,
yeah.
You know, but mm-hmm. So they went to kindergarten, then they got pulled out. And all the way through homeschools, I did all of these different, you know, mm-hmm. curriculums. I did classical conversations, which is what I did primarily. And that's what I graduated with. And I remember I graduated high school and I looked at my mom and I said, all right, mom, I'm ready to go to school. You know, I got accepted into Liberty University, Patrick Henry, a couple other nice Christian colleges. And so I remember I said, all right, I'm ready. And she said, what do you want to learn? I said, well, I want to be an actor. She goes, you don't need to go to school to be an actor.
Right,
you don't need a degree
right.
to stand in front of a camera.
Nope.
And so originally I was going to go for acting and then major in entrepreneurship, minor in communications. And I realized that school wasn't necessary in today's day and age. You know, degrees are essentially inflated and overrated.
Liberty University is a very nice campus.
Liberty's very nice.
I wanted to be 19. Let me go 1 year in this campus.
We got to go in their gym, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Spoken out there, yeah. Yeah.
She told me, she said, look, I'm fine with you not going to school, but I want you to do something with your time. Why don't you write a book? And I had, I'd written speeches. I did competitive speech and debate. So I had experience mm-hmm. writing, but not, you know, a 100, 200 page book.
Right.
And so I'd been racking my brain for about a month straight going, what am I going to talk about? When it hit me, you know, every single speech I did in speech and debate was offensive, political, and almost inappropriate because of comedy. Mm. It was politically incorrect. And I decided that should be my book. And so what I did was I sat down and I wrote down every single political word that you could think of, and I defined it. And then I went back and defined it as I would define it. And so you got the sarcastic, kind of joking, but still educational definition of each word. And I compiled them all together alphabetically, called the BS, or Braden Sorbo Guide to Politics.
That's funny.
It's understanding current events through sarcasm.
That's funny, with a purpose.
With a purpose.
Because, you know, if you ask the average person who goes, you're misogynistic, are you the critical race? They don't even know what it means.
No.
They're just parroting what they've heard.
Yeah.
So
they love their labels. That's what they
My favorite definition, I'll tell you, because I haven't memorized, is SJW. An SJW, or social justice warrior, is someone who is roughly in their late 20s, early 30s, living in their parents' basement, fighting for online equality. These people may suffer from anger and blue hair. If you
equality.
Or a loved one you know has been affected with SJW disorder, you may be entitled to financial compensation.
Oh,
just kidding, nothing is free and nobody owes you anything.
That's funny. And yet true.
Yeah.
And so much
and
of the
true.
Cases.
Exactly.
How can people get a hold of that book? They're watching or listening right now saying,
I need this for my kids. Yeah, they do. It is on Sorbo Studios. It's on our
Sorbo
family's
Studios.
Website.
Com.
And people can order it. I'll sign it and everything, you know, a little letter of affection.
There you go.
Really, really seals the deal.
Very cool. And you.
Yes, sir.
Big projects.
Big projects.
Major impact happening, actually. Really.
I got two books. Can I give a plug real quick?
Yeah.
True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal, and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life.
Wow.
And then True Faith, that my wife and I wrote together, Embracing God's Love Through Adversity. Mm. So we got two books out there. My wife's got about six different books out there. But
that sounds like titles that people can apply.
Well, the True Strength sort of fits because of Hercules, right? Because
yeah.
I had fake strength. I had a bunch of stunt guys making me look like a stud. The reality was, I'll tell it very quickly how that book came about. In a season 5 in Hercules, I was having all kinds of problems with my arm, shoulder, fingers on this, my left hand. I couldn't figure what was going on.
Mm.
And I was always getting bumps and bruises, doing my own stunts, because I enjoyed it, you know. And I get back home to do publicity on my first big budget movie called The Conqueror. And I went I was in New York. I was on Letterman, a couple of shows, and my arm was on fire. And a doctor comes to visit me. They set up the doctor to come to the hotel room. His name was Dr. Dye. Okay, change your name.
Whoopsie.
I don't care if it's D-Y-E, but it's not Dr. Dye. And he said, it could be cardiovascular. You should get checked out. So I go, when I get back home, saw my doctor in Beverly Hills, finds a lump way up here. He says, I need to do a biopsy on that. At the time, he didn't tell me he thought it was cancer. So I go to see my chiropractor. I'm laying on the table. And a voice inside my head says, don't let him crack your neck. Which is weird, because in 8 years, he's never cracked my neck, ever. I don't like my neck cracked. Every chiropractor I've ever been to, on the first time, I go, don't crack my neck. Right. Everything else is fair game. Louder, don't let him crack your neck. And I'm arguing with the voice in my head, he cracks my neck. Ends up being an aneurysm.
Oh.
That had been spitting blood clots into my hand and arm. But that crack called retrograde flow, it's called, and sent a series of four strokes into my brain. Took me 4 months to learn how to walk and balance again. Took me 3 years to fully recover. The speech came back quickly. And I still have a 10% loss of vision in both eyes, but it was 50%. But through Alexander technique and other eye things, I was able to get back quite a chunk of it. But two strokes went to my balance center, which was brutal. I still don't know what my limitations, hates using that word, because I don't want anybody to set your limitations. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm not able to do anymore compared to what I was doing prior to that, but I knew all of a sudden I was put on a different road. It was God warning me, don't let him crack your neck. Mm. And it put me on a completely different path. I didn't want to write the book. My wife made me write it, and it's been a godsend. Because when I first started signing it at bookstores and things like that, 20-year-olds that had suffered strokes, 7-year-olds, heart attacks, car crashes, whatever it may be, people said, your book has made me stop feeling sorry for myself. I put a lot of humor in the book.
Oh, that's huge.
And it was really talking about roadblocks in life. How do you get past these things? And even though the doctors did ultimately save the life, but they were wrong in terms of what my recovery would be and all that kind of stuff. So I remember I talked in front of 1,600 neurologists in San Diego when the book came out. And I said, there's a reason what they call what you guys do a practice. You don't know everything. And you need to have a more positive point of view the people, your patients you have, to give them hope.
Wow.
And every time I got down, my wife said, Kevin, it happened. What are you going to do about it? So I got this tough Pittsburgh, New York love from her. And it was, I'm very strong willed to begin with. And I did 10 times more than the doctors told me to do during my recovery. Because I said, I'm not going to let this thing control my life. So I pushed past it.
It's amazing. I mean, a lot of fans probably didn't know you went through this.
No, a lot of people do know now because I've been speaking on it for the last dozen years or so. When the book came out, but a lot of people still don't know about it.
I'm so glad you just shared that.
It's a, you know, but it happened, it was back in 97, September. It was the same day Princess Di died. So I was at Cedars-Sinai in LA.
So
I remember being wheeled in, my wife, where she was my fiancée at the time, we got married 4 months later. I was not doing that great at 4 months later. I was able to stand up and walk a little bit. And I think one piece of advice I got from the head of neurology at USC Medical Center, when I said, maybe we should hold off on the wedding until I get better. I told her, I said, you may not want to just marry me. I don't know where I'm going to end up.
Right.
She got the better or worse part before they said better or worse.
Yeah.
She stayed by my side.
Her character.
So I, he said, don't put your life on hold, which I thought was a great thing to say. He said, you've set this wedding for a long time. Don't put your life on hold because too many people
That's
do.
That's good.
He said, just live your life. And it was huge for me. When I got back to New Zealand to work on season 6 of Hercules, I went from a 14-hour workday down to 1 hour a day. They keep the series going.
Wow.
So I couldn't do much more until, over time,
two
hours by 3 months, just slowly built up the hours.
Because
I got better as I got, my brain couldn't handle it. My brain was, I didn't drive for 2 years. I couldn't handle cars going by. My brain would just sort of freak out and shut down.
Interesting.
Because it was exhausted. As the neurologist told me, he said, you need to rest.
Yeah.
But it taught me a lot, and it brought, I still have a drive, I still like staying busy, and thank God I passed every, thing. I finished those last two seasons, 510 episodes on Andromeda, and I've done 80 movies, so I'm fine now, thank you.
How can people get that book?
SorboStudios.com is the best place to go. Well, my wife and I, that's our site together. All our DVDs are on there. I got scripts on there. They're, one of a kind autographed from the cast of different shows. We got all kinds of stuff on there.
Very cool.
We got bundles of different, we got like a faith bundle. We got like a family bundle of different DVDs. I know DVDs are dying, but I still like a DVD.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty cool.
Well, folks, to let y'all know, they're here this week with us up in Colorado Springs. We were filming our Spiritual Warfare series. Mm-hmm. And we chose you to voice over and to narrate it through. And you are quite the pro in your craft. It's very fun to...
Not my first rodeo.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And it's funny, and I appreciate your true humility.
Well, I'll give David credit. It was good writing. So yeah. Good writing makes a big difference for me.
There you go. Hey, there you go.
Give him a thumbs up.
But with the project you're going, when I talk about humility, you have great humility. You just finished directing a film that's about to hit theaters.
Yep. It's Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. For those that know the Left Behind books, they were the 80 million best-selling books from Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins. And it's a wonderful, wonderful movie. It's hard-hitting. It's everything about the world's going on right now, the insanity, the craziness, the government control, fear, all this stuff is in the movie. It's a political thriller. It's 6 months. Political action thriller. Mm. It's 6 months after the rapture. So what's left on Earth are people that are now in full-on search mode, or people that will deny it. Because you know, it doesn't matter. People see somebody disappear in front of them.
Yeah.
It was aliens. They'll come up with something. Their people will still be in denial. And the Bible even talks about this. So I hope after they watch this movie, which they better watch, go to leftbehindmovie.com, leftbehindmovie.com. I took over the role of Rayford Steele, who was the pilot in the movie.
Yeah.
And this kid did a great job in the movie.
Look at you.
Playing the intern, really, a college-type student.
I played Buck Williams, who's the number one reporter in the world. And so I play his kind of head tech nerd guy. Connor Smith. And so we go on this whole journey together, you know. And he goes one way, I go another, and brings us right back together, a really nice point in the movie. I'm excited for it. Yeah. I haven't even seen it yet. I haven't looked at any rough drafts, anything really? Other than the trailer.
Well, it opens January 26th. And so please, theaters are filling up. We got 1,500 screens. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited for that. For an independent movie, that's a pretty good screen count.
Well, and, you know, we've made films as well. And the reality, people need to understand, the only way for, you know, family-friendly, mm-hmm. solid films to be made is if you support it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Numbers matter.
Oh, it's as simple as that.
And yeah. I can tell y'all from visiting with friends like you, mm-hmm. You know, Stephen Baldwin, we were having dinner recently. People in the industry who are accomplished and respected, they're trying to make a difference. And it requires that people don't say, oh, yeah, that's great or whatever, but you actually go see it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I told you this before. I think it's good for people here because I get stopped all the time. It's mostly now for God's Not Dead, Soul Surfer, Let There Be Light, the other movies I've done.
Right.
And people want movies like this. Well, I don't have a $100 million advertising budget like James Cameron does for his $300 million movies.
Right.
And for what they have for Pirates of the Caribbean and Avengers and all that, we need strong word of mouth. And people say, make more movies like that. Well, try to keep up with what we're doing somehow. Go to SorboStudios.com. We'll let you know it's coming on the pipeline. But fill these theaters up because theater owners don't care. They want to sell popcorn and sodas. Right. They don't care what movie they're showing.
Yeah.
If a movie's hit, then they're gonna keep on going because they know they got a little cash cow for themselves. So, we're gonna keep making these movies because we got a battle on our hands. We got a cultural battle on our hands that Hollywood has been kicking our butt on. And they look at the stuff they're putting out there. There's been a kickback finally. You look at what's going on Netflix, Disney. They've lost so many people because of that same agendas over and over. People are sick of it. So
when you lose people, you're losing money.
Yeah, yeah. So we're gonna keep doing the movies we do. I hope people check it out. It's leftbehindmovie.com. You can see the trailer. You can see the location of the theater near you.
Oh, very cool. So folks, please, we're just saying, one, not only is it a great movie.
Why directed it? So
come on, please.
And I was in it. So.
And he's
exactly.
In it, so. Whatever.
Oh, great cast. I got to say, Corbin Burnson's in it. People remember from LA Law and Psych. And TV Psych. Neil McDonough's been in everything. One of my favorite things was the Band of Brothers miniseries, which
and
was
Yellowstone.
Phenomenal. Yellowstone, he was on the last season with Costner. We got Bailey Chase, who was on Longmire, the Western that I should have been in. And then we got Sarah Fisher, Canadian up-and-comer. She's awesome, plays my daughter in it. And Greg Perreault, who's really got the lead in the movie over all of us. I mean, he's the main anchor guy that says, enough of the fake news. He says, why aren't we telling the truth here? And he's like the number one anchor guy in the country, and he gets fired because he's not towing the line to mislead people with fear, which, as we know, government's favorite weapon.
Well, it's people need a movie of hope right now.
This movie's got it.
And it's because we talk about it. Never in our lifetime have we seen something so extreme and radical.
Yeah.
And there's never been a greater time for believers, Christians, conservatives, to actually get motivated to take action. And we need motivation and inspiration. This movie will do it.
Yeah.
So we are really excited and hopeful for a great turnout. Because I even think non-believers can go to this.
This movie is for everyone.
It's not a cheesy Christian.
No, not at all.
Movie.
It's not. Well, I think Christian movies over the last 10 years have really gotten good.
Oh yeah.
The production value is just as good as any $100 million movie because we have the same cameras and all that. We just don't have all the visual effects.
Right.
But these are actor movies, I call it. Yeah. Because you know, I always like to point to Clint Eastwood's movie Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah.
Okay. That won Best Picture, it won Best Actress, and it won Best Supporting Actor with Morgan Freeman. They shot that in 24 days.
Yeah.
It's not these 7 years of filming
Avatar
you know. So there's wonderful, wonderful faith movies out there, and they're just getting better. And this story, they rewrote everything to make it into today's world, which I thought was phenomenal.
It fits. It's relatable.
Anybody
can look at that, whether they're religious and go, wow. I see that happening today around me.
Yeah. It's not like, you better believe in God. No, this is a movie that, you know, the message is in there, but it's not in your face.
Well, and it helps explain to people what's going on.
Yeah.
Even right now with the vaccine, people are dying just.
Yeah.
And they're trying to say it's climate issues.
Young adult death syndrome or whatever.
You mean weather? But go ahead.
Yeah. It's ludicrous. And people, we said this talking yesterday, there's a tipping point.
Yeah.
People are just tired of the BS.
Yep.
Just like, hey, okay, enough is enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be exciting. And I think a future for more films.
Well, they're writing the sequel to this one right now. So I'll be directing that one later in the year.
No,
they're very happy with already the huge amount of screens and theaters that are asking for us. Because we were on about... I think around 800 screens when it first went out, and all 700 screens theater said, no, we want it too.
Wow.
So they
said, know
we want it.
They know
so,
this
yeah.
is. Now, you have a couple other projects.
I got the Reagan movie, which will be out this summer.
Oh, that's...
With Dennis Quaid as the president, I play his pastor. And then another movie I directed called Miracle in East Texas.
Mm-hmm.
True story set in 1930 about two con men played by myself and John Ratzenberger.
Wow.
Where people remember him from Cheers, of course.
Yeah.
True story, 1930, right in the heart of the Depression. They went through Oklahoma and Texas, wooing widows out of their money on fake oil wells. But they would sell 500% of the shares, declare dry hole, move on. This is true. You wouldn't get away with that today's world, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
This is 1930. They get to Kilgore, Texas. They strike oil by accident, largest oil find in the history of the world. That's where the Hunt family came in. That's how they became wealthy, was through that.
No kidding.
Yeah. We changed the name to Hunt to Heinz.
Yeah.
Say with the ketchup roll. So he changed the guy's name. He's only in the one scene at the very end, near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So you find out what happened or how these guys. But it's a lot of humor. True story written by Dan Gordon, Academy nominated writer. He wrote The Hurricane for Denzel Washington.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote White Earp, Kevin Costner.
Wow.
Really good writer. And he wrote this one. And it's a very good movie. We shot it in Calgary. I remember showing it to a group of people in Dallas-Fort Worth. And afterwards at a Q&A, there's an investor guys, and they said, oh, I know where that is, where that was shot. And I said, no, you don't. where was it shot? I go, Calgary, Canada. They went, what? Why would you shoot that movie? I said, well, it's called show business.
Yeah.
And up there you get a 30% tax credit. You don't have that here in Texas. And we got 25% break on the dollar because their dollar is weaker than the American dollar. And it was a 3,000-acre ranch that Clint Eastwood shot Unforgiven in, and Kevin Costner shot Open Range. So if it's good enough for those guys, it was good enough for me.
Yeah,
it's good enough for us.
So, come on, Texas. Well, all this is exciting.
Yeah.
How can people track when those films are going
to
hit?
Once again, sorbostudios.com is the best place to go.
So, all right.
And we have five. I shot those. All three of those movies that are coming this year were shot back in 2021.
Okay.
And 2022, I shot five more movies, which won't be there in post-production now. And they'll be out the end of this year or probably early 2024. He and I shot another movie together, one of those five.
Mm-hmm.
We shot up in Montana.
Missoula, Montana.
And
it's called Cuisine de l'Apocalypse.
It's a zombie movie.
Come on.
But it's a comedy.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. It's basically about a guy who tries to start a cooking show during the middle of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
That's actually just hilarious.
And his character, he's got one of the lead roles, and his character, you designed.
Gray. I basically am the Elon Musk of the town. Yeah. I am the reason we have power.
Because it's all disappeared, but he's brought it back.
I'm the reason, you know, the town is a functioning, living, breathing thing, and this guy is in my way, and he's
the chef sneaks and uses it,
broadcasts
to the
world. Wait, don't spoil. He steals my stuff. Yeah. We'll put it that way. And it leads to some very interesting, encounters.
Well, because they...
Especially for his character.
Well, they wanted to be left alone.
Yeah.
Okay. And now the world, whatever's left of the world, they know the location where they're in there. It goes, you're bringing trouble to our little town here now.
All based on cuisine?
All because of a cooking show.
Oh, that's funny.
It's very funny.
And actually, it kind of sounds plausible.
And I played shot in Mississippi. I played a 700-year-old zombie.
Vampire.
A 700-year-old vampire.
Yeah.
In a movie called, it's The Vampire Project. They haven't got the title yet, but it's another very big comedy. It's very funny. Yeah. And so I got two movies that I've always wanted to do, all but shot last year.
Okay,
so.
let me ask you just a quick technical question. How do you memorize these scripts when you're doing five?
Everyone has a different method. His method is he'll get the script and he'll just read it, you know, a couple times before bed every night. So he'll be memorized. Say he's filming.
Notes all the time on script, on scenes. I want to make sure that I'm prepped and ready to go.
Yeah, well, he's ready to go 2 weeks before, you know, they even start filming. And if they're filming on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he's got all the way up till Friday memorized. And once Monday finishes, he's memorizing for Saturday, too. I am like my mom. My mom will sit in the makeup chair and memorize her lines as they're going.
It's kind of annoying to me. They memorize quicker than that. I
did a movie called A Wave of Kindness, which I want them to change the name back because the Waving Man sounds...
Waving Man was a much better title.
Really cool. But I play the lead in that, and I'm a college student going back, and my first big story is a make or break. It's this where I get fired. Is about a guy who goes missing. Mm. And so I can't interview him. And so the whole movie is my search to find this person, you know. And
we as were a doing, story.
Yeah, we did it. We filmed the whole movie in 11 days. We did roughly 10 scenes a day. So every night before bed, I was memorizing 10 to 15 different pages of dialogue.
Trust me. this incredible.
Well, I did a movie called Let There Be Light. I gave you a DVD.
Yes.
It came out 5 years ago, 2018 it came out.
I was 15. When we filmed
it. Oh my gosh, that was scary. I was just in between.
So Sean Hannity actually funded that one, but the theaters had a very good run in theaters. The opening monologue that I have was 10 pages long, single space, 10 pages. I memorized it. I also directed that movie. We had 700 people in the audience when I did it, and I nailed it. I was so good. I studied, trust me, I put my time in. Great speech. Dan Gordon actually wrote that speech. My wife wrote the original draft. He came in and rewrote about 25% of it. But he rewrote my hope and thing where I'm debating this pastor. I'm playing the world's greatest atheist. I'm not just I'm like Singer, Dawkins, Hitchens. I'm one of those guys.
Yeah.
My book is Aborting God. That's my latest book that I'm out there. We're having to debate each other. I barely let him speak. And when we went to editing, the trouble is, it's long. I kept good pace on it, but we wanted to get the movie going. So we literally cut 50% of that. You'll see it's really well done. I mean, it's really well written. But we had to do this whole thing, cut it down because we had to get to the movie. And it was frustrating for me because I memorized 10 pages. But I'm okay with that. I get it. But it is, you know, you put that kind of work in, you're going, okay. But it was, I highly recommend it. Another one I recommend, here's my full circle with Left Behind. Mm. Jerry Jenkins produced and funded my very first faith-based movie back in 2010.
Really?
It's called What If. Same writers that did God's Not Dead, but it came out a couple years before God's Not Dead. Better movie.
Really?
A lot of people don't know about it. What If? Go to SorboStudios.com.
It's a great cast.
And get,
So go John Ratzenberger.
Christy Swanson, the original Buffy the Vampire. Ryan. Yep, Debbie Ryan, who's the big Disney star. And so I said, you know, Dallas Jenkins directed it, who's now doing a thing called The Chosen.
Yeah, The Chosen.
So when he came to me with the script just to read as a friend, I said, who's playing Pastor Ben? He goes, I got this guy. No, it's me. He goes, dude, I can't afford you.
Right.
There's a real low budget. And I said, pay me what you have to pay, scale, whatever. Right. Because we're SAG, you got to pay the minimum. I said, I'll do this. I would do this movie for free. Awesome. Great movie. It's John Ratzenberger plays an angel coming down to show me that God's given me what if. That I was supposed to go down this road. This was what the road God intended me, but I went down this road. The trouble is, I love the road I'm on. It's like a reverse It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
So I go down this road that I have to decide. Well, I go halfway through it. I go, dude, I don't like this. He goes, well, God gave you free will. You can go back to your life if you want it. So it's very funny. It's very touching. John Ratzenberger is a very curmudgeon, smart-ass angel.
Yeah.
When I ask him, well, who did God send then? Are you like some special angel? He goes, he set me up with you. So that should tell you how special I am.
The client just, list.
Oh, yeah.
Now, again, to the website, or is it streaming somewhere?
You can go, PureFlix has it. So you can stream, there's a PureFlix movie, so they can go to stream it, or they can get, I think it's probably on Amazon too, but they can go, if they want an actual DVD copy, they can get an autograph signed from us.
Now, most people these days, they're going to stream Amazon Prime or Netflix. Is there a lack of some of these films being bought or being able to be put on those?
Well, Let There Be Light, Amazon gave us a 2-year great deal. So they're putting it out there because I think they're getting smart enough to realize there's a crowd out there.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think they've been learning a valuable lesson not to be such, agenda-pushing people. I mean, every movie's got an agenda.
Yeah. Right.
But I think they realize there's literally 80 yeah. million homes out there in America that want the kind of movies that we're doing.
Yeah. And that's the power of your voice.
And what you're doing.
And you choose. So, all right. So we have to land this plane for time's sake.
Yeah, we've rambled on so long.
But this is good. This is just us hanging out. This is what you get. I ask a question. I'm going to direct it toward you. And I'll get you on the next one. But I ask two questions of everybody the first time they're on the podcast the show. And I just say, people just like to hear what you believe. So the first thing is, it's a perception. Most people live by perception. Who's this person? What are they doing? What's your perception in the short amount of time that you know about us and what we do? What's your perception of me or my wife and what we do?
You're doing God's work. It's as simple as that. You got a message out there that people are yearning for, people need, people want, and a lot of people don't even know it. Mm. I think they're lost. I think there's a lot of lost souls, a lot of people that are looking. Look, I think the biggest thing that people are looking for is hope.
Yeah.
More than anything else.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest killer in society right now is apathy. Mm. And, what you're doing is God's cheering you on, man, leading the way. And it's a good thing to have him in your side.
Okay, thank you. And I appreciate those kind words. We do. Had somebody the other day say, man, you're an ambassador of hope. And I thought, okay, I'll take that. Yeah. Because faith, hope, and love. Mm-hmm. But if you lose hope, you can't really execute love or faith.
Yeah.
The hope is the driving part. So I appreciate that. Second question.
Oh, to him.
Here we go. Uh-oh. Number two. So we were talking story earlier, but the one thing that is consistent is everybody dies.
Mm.
And Hercules one day will die. You've come close to it. It changed your life. We both have had experiences that were life-changing. Many people watching and listening. What happens to Kevin Sorbo when you close your eyes for the last time? What do you believe will happen and why?
I believe that I'll see the light, because I saw the light when my father died, when he came to visit me at my home.
Mm.
I believe that I'm certainly not a perfect person by any means, but I believe that God is very happy with the road I've taken, the things that I'm doing, and the message I'm trying to get out there. And, Jesus said that you will be attacked for having your belief.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I always end a lot of my speaking events this way. I do a lot of speaking events, pro-life, Christian education, stuff like that. And I say, one of my favorite poems is Robert Frost's poem, The Road Less Traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jesus was probably the first one to really walk the road less traveled and get attacked for what he did. There were people in there, but I just kind of relate to that with Jesus. I picture him. And I say, I know you're on that road. I know my sons, I'm on that road. But I want to turn the road less traveled into a super highway.
Mm.
And that's what I think that's my message here right now. And I think God is going to be proud of those things, of my the road that I've taken as well.
Love it. Yeah, well, none of us are perfect, that's for sure. And thank God for the cross. And that's why we talk about Jesus. I mean, without that, what would we have?
We'd have what people that don't have belief have right now.
Yeah, who are without hope.
Yeah, sure.
And, this is the first time I've said it on a podcast. I lost my brother recently. And this one was tough. Don't worry, I didn't like him that much. He used to beat me up as a kid. Which, by the way, every time I do something that was noteworthy, like Iraq or face ISIS or whatever, governor, he'd always say, you know, you're welcome, because I'd beat the fire out of you and make you to be able to handle that stuff. Yeah, and I'm like, okay, thanks, Mike. But when I spoke at his memorial, and I was thankful that he died fast. He didn't feel anything. But my hope, living hope, is Jesus Christ, because of that cross. My brother had that faith. And my brother's a ruffian, man. I mean, oil field trash, and end up, you know, living in tall cotton with a big ranch and made a ton of money. But his faith was in Jesus. He's like, and the one thing, here's the one thing that's changed about me since COVID. You really got to see what people believed.
Yeah.
And polished pastors and Christians folded.
Yep.
Their faith didn't hold them up. Yep. And yet I've got people and friends who might be potty mouth, you know, knuckle dragging, rough, direct speaking, that I trust more because their integrity and their character came through all those hard times based on their faith.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we went to Bethlehem a few years back. You know, the one thing, and I'll just say it, I was so concerned at the level of almost pride that the evangelical world has in America, American Christians, a pride like they've got it all locked down, not even thinking about Christians around the world who suffer, who die. I'll give you a great example. I brought some pastors over to Iraq one time to speak to a very small church, shotgun church, who their church had been attacked. And one of the pastors got up there and was speaking so fast, the interpreter was trying, and he goes, "Pastor, could you please slow down? We can't interpret." And he goes, "Well, you better keep up, because I'm teaching the Word of God." And I remember thinking, I think I'm going to throw punch that dude. What an idiot. He's so arrogant. And, you know, I'm coming to America. I'm like, you guys should sit down and let these Christians tell you what it's like to be persecuted, to lose somebody, to suffer. So the polishing doesn't work. It's just the faith. And I thank God for your faith. Thank you. You've passed it on to Braden. And I thank you for the work that you're doing and the work that you're doing. I really didn't know how extensively involved in all this you were. So I knew there was something special about you, the man cub. So guys, they're on social media. Look them up, follow them. And again, the website.
Sorbo Studios.
SorboStudios.com, LeftBehindMovie.com. Follow me on Twitter, KSorbs, K-S-O-R-B-S.
Braden Sorbo and on everything.
You don't want to mention the one?
Which one?
TikTok.
Oh, well, that's everything.
He's got 2 million followers on TikTok.
Whoa!
He tells jokes, and they're very funny, and he throws me in about 25% of them.
A little more. People like seeing us.
What? Yeah. Interesting.
I get 50-year-old guys going, "I love your son's TikTok."
So that's great.
It's pretty funny.
Well, so you guys follow, support the film. Let us know.
Don't be left behind by not seeing the movie Left Behind. And take a friend, because it's easier to ask people to go to a movie than it is to invite them to your church. I get it.
True.
So take them to a movie.
Take advantage of this now. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, remember, do it for the glory of God. That's a better purpose and mission in life. We appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Now go get it done.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. We'd love to stay connected with you and invite you to the conversation beyond this podcast. You can check out more of the work we're doing around the world at victormarks.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all linked in the show notes. Be sure to drop us a comment in the review section if today's show has impacted you in any way, or if there's anything you'd like to hear more of. We're always encouraged to hear from you. Thanks for spending your time with us. Until next time.